All right, so let's get back to the Chronicles of the Apostles. Acts chapter 25 is where we're at. Paul has been in Caesarea for quite a while, a couple of years. The first governor of that area, Felix, has moved to Pompeii. And a guy named Festus has taken over. Festus realizes he's inherited a lot of Felix's mess from rogue Sicaria zealots running around to a guy named Paul hanging out in the palace. And Felix, or Festus, wants to kind of make a good start, a good impression. So he calls in the Jewish leadership to say, well, let's resolve this Paul thing. He hears their case again. He hears Paul's defense. And so he doesn't know really what to do. So he figures, well, I want to keep Jewish revolt down, so maybe I'll do something good for the Jewish leadership, and that'll foster our relationship. So picks up the text here in verse 9. Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, said to Paul, do you wish to go up to Jerusalem and there be tried on these charges before me? But Paul said, I'm standing before Caesar's tribunal, where I ought to be tried. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you yourself know very well. Remember, Festus was very familiar with the way and their pattern. And so he says, you know. If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything for which I deserve to die, I do not seek to escape death. But if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can give me up to them. I appeal to Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with his council, answered, to Caesar you have appealed, to Caesar you shall go. So Festus quickly realizes the whole Paul thing is not an issue. And it's certainly not an issue for his Roman court. He wants to grant Ananias and the chief priests some of the boon they've requested to gain some early favor in his young tenure. But he has the integrity to consult Paul first. And so he says to Paul, do you want to go back to Jerusalem and stand trial there? And there's nothing I can do for you here. This seems to be a religious matter. Do you want to go back to Jerusalem and to the religious court and stand trial? Paul's not really trusting Festus. He knows he would never survive the change of venue. He knows that he would probably be ambushed on the way back. He perceives that Festus was hoping to turn him over. He refuses the offer and he demands to have his trial only in a Roman court of law, which is really going to force Festus' hand. He's either going to have to charge Paul with something and have him stand trial in a Roman trial, or he's going to have to release him as a free man. Because it is not a religious matter. Paul has made the higher appeal as far as Rome is concerned in appealing to Caesar. And therefore, Festus has to say, either you go to Caesar or you go free. And so, since he couldn't do the favor of sending him back to Jerusalem where they could eat Paul alive, he at least does the favor of not setting Paul free and says, you want to go to Caesar? I'll send you to Caesar. Paul has said he's done no wrong to the Jews. If he's done anything worthy of death according to Roman law, he said he'd be willing to pay that penalty, but he wanted his day in court. When Paul played this last card of I appeal to Caesar, he was appealing what is known as provocatio. This is the appeal to the emperor that arose out of the earlier right of appeal to the sovereign people, the populus Romanus. It's one of the most ancient rights of the Roman citizen. And at the time of Paul, for all the Roman Empire was, it still had a few things that it valued as sacred, as religious. And Roman law was one of those things. Even at Paul's time, even with someone like Festus. And so it was like an appeal for us to the Bible. When Paul made this appeal, it was something deeply rooted in the whole foundation of the Roman Empire. It goes back to the foundation of the Republic. Roman law affirmed the right to such an appeal in strong language to protect Roman citizens from injustice in courts. It became official Roman law. It's what's known as Lex Julia, the law of Julius, meaning the law of Julius Caesar. This is actually a quote from Roman law of Paul's day. Anyone invested with authority who puts to death or orders to be put to death, tortures, scourges, condemns, or directs a Roman citizen who first appealed to the people and now has appealed to the emperor to be placed in chains shall be condemned under the Lex Julia relating to public violence. The punishment of this crime is death, where the parties are of inferior station, deportation to an island like Patmos or like Pompeii, where they are of superior station. So what the Roman law said for someone like Festus was this. Hey, Festus, if a Roman citizen appeals to you for a trial before the emperor and you deny it, at worst, you're going to die. And at best, you're just going to be sent in exile in some island far away. But it isn't going to go well for you. And it's not just if you request a trial. It's if you mistreat him. If you treat him with any kind of cruelty or injustice, which is why originally when Paul was in Jerusalem and they had kind of, the Roman guys had kind of roughed him up before they realized he was a Roman citizen, that's why they wanted to get rid of him as fast as they could. Because this is the law that was over them. And for some of those guards, they would have been of lower station and it would have meant their life. And so it's sacred. Even for all the Roman Empire is, even with all of its corruption, there are still a few non-negotiables. This is one of them. The appeal to Caesar brought the trial to a dead stop for Paul. Festus confers with his legal team. They confirm Paul is a citizen, that he has the right to such appeal. And they agree, and Festus says kind of tersely, you've appealed to Caesar you will go. One might wonder why Paul thought it prudent to appeal to the corrupt and wicked Caesar Nero. That's who Paul is appealing to. He wants to go see Nero. Now what comes to your mind when you hear the word Nero? Right? That's not someone you would necessarily want to go see and entrust your future to. However, at this point, in the late 50s, Nero had not manifested his dark side. During the early years of his reign, his mother Agrippina, his advisors Seneca and Burrus did most of the real work, and they kept Nero on a very short leash. People spoke of Nero at the time of Paul in glowing terms. He's just a young kid, right? He hasn't shown his sadistic side yet. They considered Nero to be the best emperor since Augustus. Again, at the time when Paul makes this appeal, speaking hopefully that he would bring a new golden age for Rome. So Paul at this point has no reason to think Nero would not grant him a fair hearing, or that it would be a bad idea to go see Nero. Text continues in verse 13. Now when some days had passed, Agrippa the king and Bernice, his sister, arrived at Caesarea and greeted Festus. Nero had been good to King Agrippa II. In 56 AD, Nero gave Agrippa II the Galilean cities of Magdala and Tiberias, along with other cities in Perea, which is right around Tiberias. So Nero had Agrippa II had a large chunk of the Galilee under his territory. Agrippa II felt certain that he was on his way to obtaining the whole kingdom. that his father Agrippa and his great-grandfather Herod the Great had. And so in this kind of gratitude for getting this chunk of the Galilee, Agrippa II changed the name of his capital from Caesarea Philippi to Neronius. All right, so Caesarea Philippi undergoes a name change under Agrippa II to Neronius, named after Nero. And so Agrippa II is kind of wanting all of Judea, including Festus's territory. Agrippa, therefore, doesn't have a good relationship with these kinds of guys in Caesarea, especially the predecessor of Festus, Felix. Agrippa is eager to get off to a better start with Festus. He has authority over parts of the Galilee, parts of the temple, and parts of the high priesthood. To successfully manage his obligation, he needs to cooperate with Festus, something he was unable to do with Felix. So he and his sister, Queen Bernice, travel from Neronius, or Caesarea Philippi, to the other Caesarea, the one by the sea. At the time he meets Festus, Herod Agrippa II was 33 years old. His sister Bernice was a year younger. As of this point, the slanderous rumors about their illicit relationship of brother and sister had not circulated. And so they want to meet Festus, and they're also visiting the palace that their great-grandfather built and that their father used to live in. So imagine how awkward that is. That's like someone dinging your doorbell and saying, "Hi, you know, not only am I like one of the supervisors where you work, but I was brought up in this house. Do you mind if we come in and see what you've done with the place?" Right? And again, Agrippa II has aspirations of being like his great-grandfather, Herod the Great, which would mean living in that palace again. Okay, so it's going to be kind of awkward between the two of them, but they would have arrived with the royal pomp and circumstance befitting a king and a queen. Festus receives them into the praetorium. Again, the place built by Agrippa's great-grandfather, the place where his father once lived. The palace was on this natural stone formation that jetted out into the Mediterranean Sea. The royal siblings stayed in Caesarea for several days, and Festus brought them up to speed on what's been going on. They explained, Agrippa would have explained to Festus Jewish sensitivities, because Agrippa claims he's Jewish, and he claims he wants to be king of the Jews. And he would have warned Festus about the potential landmines, offered him some practical advice on negotiating his way around cities like Jerusalem, such as don't let your soldiers trespass on the temple, don't bring standards into Jerusalem, that's only going to cause bloodshed. Would have warned him about the zealots, insurrections, and all of those kinds of things. So they kind of decide to have a conversation. So verses 14 through 22. "And as they," Agrippa II and Bernice, "stayed there many days, Festus laid Paul's case before the king." So Festus is basically saying, "Look, since we're talking and we're getting to know one another, and I don't know a whole lot about Jewish culture, I've got this kind of weird case with this guy named Paul. There is a man left prisoner by Felix. And when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews laid out their case against him, asking for a sentence of condemnation against him. I answered them that it was not the custom of the Romans to give up anyone before the accused met the accusers face to face and had the opportunity to make his defense concerning the charge laid against him. So when they came together here, I made no delay, but on the next day took my seat on the tribunal and ordered the man to be brought. When the accusers stood up, they brought no charge in his case of such evils as I supposed. Rather, they had certain points of dispute with him about their own religion and about a certain Jesus who was dead but whom Paul asserts is alive. Being at a loss at how to investigate these kinds of questions, I asked whether he wanted to go to Jerusalem and be tried there regarding them. But when Paul appealed to be kept in custody for the decision of the emperor, I ordered him to be held until I could send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said to Festus, I would like to hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, you will hear him. Okay? So, this sounds a lot like the gospel reading in worship today, but between Pilate and Herod, right? They were kind of political rivals, were stepping on each other's toes and territories, but this Jesus guy and this Jesus question and this Jesus trial brings them together. Festus and Agrippa, kind of rivals, kind of step on each other's toes, kind of have territories that intermingle and that each would like to have control over. Things really didn't go well between Agrippa and the predecessor to Festus. But over this Paul guy and this trial of Paul, we're going to see they become friends. So Festus takes advantage of the opportunity to consult Agrippa. Felix had left this prisoner. And so Festus kind of reviews the whole case with Agrippa. Festus confessed that it was out of his element. He was uncertain how to proceed. He says, I have nothing definite about to write to him, to Caesar. For it seems absurd to me in sending a prisoner not to indicate charges against him. So Agrippa says, let me check into it. And then the text continues, verses 23 and 27. So on the next day, Agrippa and Bernice came with great pomp, and they entered the audience hall with the military, tribunes, and the prominent men of the city. Then at the command of Festus, Paul was brought in. And Festus said, King Agrippa and all who were present with us, you see this man about whom the whole Jewish people petitioned me. A little exaggeration perhaps, right? Was it the whole Jewish people or was it a few Sadducees, both in Jerusalem and here, shouting that he ought not live any longer. But I found that he's done nothing deserving death. Sounds a lot like Pilate, doesn't it? And as he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided to go ahead and send him. But I have nothing definite to write to Caesar about him. Therefore, I brought him before you all, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after we have examined him, I will have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable in sending a prisoner not to indicate the charges against him. So we see again, Paul really has no official charges against him. This is kind of like when the police hold you for questioning and they have made no charges against you. They really aren't supposed to do that for more than like 24 hours at most, right? Well, Paul has been there for over 2 years without an official charge being held against him. When Paul heard that he was to testify before Agrippa the Second, probably something of Jesus went through his mind when Jesus said, you will be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. And so Festus tells that this was not to be a trial. Tells Paul it's not going to be a trial. He just needs to know what to write on the case, why you're going. Festus decided to make an event of it, has all the pomp and circumstances. We also have to keep in mind what Paul probably would have looked like at this point. If you go back to Acts chapter 21, we learn that Paul was in the midst of a Nazirite vow. And what's one of the things about a Nazirite vow? You don't cut your hair. Don't trim it at all or anything. Don't trim your beard or anything. And Paul was going to go up on the Temple Mount and complete the Nazirite vow by offering the sacrifices. However, what happened? As he was about to do all of that, it all hit the fan. And he didn't get to complete the Nazirite vow. Now, Paul has already told us repeatedly that he loves the law, that he observes the law, that he keeps the law, that he's faithful to the law. So that means for over 2 years, Paul has done no grooming. Now, that may not be a problem for some of you guys, but for others, it could be quite a mess, right? So, also part of that was just this vow of simplicity, so you wear the same clothes, just so Paul would have looked like the most truest sense of the crazy, wild prophet, right? He was not coming in. His attorney did not say, hey, I'm going to the store and I'm going to buy you a new suit and we're going to get you cleaned up and all that. Paul would have come in with the same clothes he's had on for at least 2 years. And he would have only bathed in the most simplest ways as a Nazarite. And he would not have groomed himself at all in over 2 years. So that's Paul walking in to see King Agrippa II. Okay? He would have looked the part of an ancient prophet. Festus began with the introduction, addressing the king and the nobleman, saying, you see this man about whom all the Jews appeal to me, both in Jerusalem and here. Of course, that's an exaggeration. It was just a few Jewish leaders from Jerusalem that had appealed to him for Paul. But it made the proceedings sound more dramatic. Festus tells the crowd that Paul had appealed to Caesar, but he didn't know what to write. He didn't know what his charges were. So he was looking to the nobleman, and he was looking to Agrippa II. So this is kind of flattery here, like, oh, I'm the new guy here, and you know, you're so wise. Perhaps you can help me figure this out. And so with that, Paul appears before King Agrippa II and Bernice. And when we get back together next week, we will hear one more time a defense from Paul. 6 times Paul makes a defense in the book of Acts at the end. And we're going to hear one of his other defenses before Agrippa and Bernice, before he soon gets his wish to finally make it to Rome. All right, so we will close there and we will pick it up next week. Let's close with prayer. Baruch atah Adonai, noten hadavar. Blessed are you, Lord God, who has given to us the gift of the Holy Scriptures. Amen.